Oh, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Another early daily editorial this morning. I am joined by Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Mark, first comment from you I want regarding the U.S. bond market. When it comes to that 30-year auction that we saw yesterday, it's not something I talk about on a regular basis. Usually we just touch on the actual yields in the market. However, the yield on this auction is the lowest ever that it has come in for the 30-year bond. This is just continuing to show money flowing into the U.S. We can get into that a little bit later. But what are your comments, your general thoughts on still the bond market taking in a lot of money and this low yield for this auction for the 30-year?
Yeah, no, it's quite amazing. The 30-year bond yield at the auction was 2.06%. It's the lowest yield at the auction by about 11 basis points. So it's quite a move. I think that it's, you know, what we're really seeing, I think to your point, is we are seeing money flow into the U.S. Remember, you've got many countries, Europe and Japan, negative yielding bonds, and people like the idea of I think of a positive yield, and the U.S., you get that, and not only are you getting that, but the U.S. dollar is also strong. And so you're getting it. What investors care about is a total return. So total return, three components: the yield, and you'd say, well, 2% pretty low for a 30-year bond. But in addition to that, you get the dollar, which is appreciating, and if interest rates continue to fall, you get the capital appreciation as well. So it's a sharp move. I don't think we're over yet, but I think that the 2% level in the 30-year is a very important psychological level. And the reason it's so important is that is the Fed's inflation target, right? So if you think the Fed might not get inflation target this year or next year, but over the long term it will, then accepting a 30-year bond with a 2% yield or below really means that you're accepting, you're locking in a likely negative real rate.
Isn't that crazy, though, if you think about that moving forward, like a 30-year bond paying under 2% and people, in a way, almost rushing into it, assuming that yields are going to stay long for maybe not forever, but it sure almost seems like forever.
Yeah, no, I think that's the mindset right now. I mean, I think that, you know, at the end of last year, people were like resisting that. And people talking about where U.S., you know, the 10-year yield, the benchmark, where it was going to go. And people were, what were people at the end of last year? Bullish stocks, bearish bonds. And the bond market, you know, stocks have rallied for sure, but so have bonds. And it's really, I mean, I think there's really two camps out there. One camp thinks this is an anomaly, that we can't have negative yield. Something's broken and things will eventually normalize, even if you don't know when or how. And another group thinks that this is the new normal. And I think that's the division, not so much between bulls and bears. I think that's the real division between like types of investors right now.
So I guess the question is this a new normal? We can tie this in with the dollar moving higher as well, because you and I were chatting about that off mic, and you said usually when the dollar goes through a big move, or at least historically, we've seen some sort of intervention come into the market to slow down an escalating dollar. We're obviously not at that level yet. The dollar isn't quite at that 100 level, but if we do see that dollar keep on running, is it a new normal in the sense that maybe we won't see some intervention? Maybe the bond market could continue to run in the face of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what would it take to right now to turn the dollar around? Because, you know, as you know, I had been thinking the dollar was turning. And in Q4, the dollar fell. And I think that the new coronavirus has changed things against China. I mean, in this sense, the U.S., its biggest rival, has shot itself in the foot. And the European economic data was really poor as well. And so I think that we got this new divergence, but the euro is really it's sort of like Coke and the non-Coke or the un-cola. And I think that the dollar, the non-dollar is the euro. And the euro is really bearing the burden. Rather than using the dollar as a funding currency to buy higher yielding assets, people are using the euro. And the euro, and nobody's objecting. I think this is why I think we're far from intervention, not because of the U.S., the economic nationalism, the ability or the willingness of the President Trump to try to talk the dollar down and tweak the dollar down, as it were, have it proved very successful, and maybe they would escalate that and intervene since the dollar is making new highs. I don't see that as very likely. I think there still is a bit of a taboo or threshold that has to be crossed. And the past interventions, the past dollar rallies, like the Reagan-Volcker dollar rally and the Clinton-Rubin dollar rally, both of those did end with intervention, but they were international efforts, coordinated efforts, the Plaza Agreement in September of 85, and the agreement to stop the selling of the euro in October of 2000. And this put, so both of those rallies ended, and I didn't think that would be necessary this time. Not only don't I think it's likely in the near term, but I didn't think it was necessary because I thought things were changing. I mean, I thought that the sentiment survey showed Europe was recovering. I thought that the economic data, the sort of economic entrails, were showing a weaker U.S. economy. And we still might have these things, but it looks to me now that the euro's trading. We got down yesterday to about 108.30. There's some support that runs from about 107.5 to about 108.20. That's an old gap on the charts from back when in 2017, due to the French elections. That really marked the bottom of the euro at the time. That gap higher really signaled the end. And I think we might have to go down and get enter that gap. Key level, psychologically and everything, I think is closer to 105.
So a lot of this dollar strength then, as it happens with the dollar index, is on the back of just weakness out of Europe, because we haven't seen too major of moves against other currencies when you take the dollar against them, correct?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, if anything, like, I sort of sometimes think of the dollar as the middle of this, the fulcrum of like a teeter-totter. And what we've really been seeing happening when the coronavirus was the most acute, or people perceived it to be the most acute, we saw that the dollar block currencies, Aussie, Kiwi, Canada, and Norway and Sweden weakened. And the other currencies would be able to hold their own or strengthen. And more recently, quite the opposite has taken place. People, I think, looking past the virus, and Aussie's been relatively strong, Kiwi's been strong, Canadian dollar backed away from like 2 month lows, 3 month lows. So I think that we're in a position here where the dollar is broadly firm, but especially against the euro.
All right. Let's look ahead to next week, too. What are some of the drivers or catalysts that you see next week that you think we should be paying attention to? Let's start with the U.S.
Yeah, so the U.S., we do get a lot of data for the U.S., a lot of housing data. We get the TIC data, producer prices. But the key, I think, is not so much what happened in January anymore. The key is getting more data about February, because by then we got the impact of some trade disruptions and, of course, more evidence or more time for the Boeing's cutback to filter through. So I'll be watching the Empire State Survey and the Philly Fed Survey. Both of those are among the first indicators we get for how the economy is doing in February. Late in the week, we'll get the flash PMI. But again, the reason I would be playing down U.S. data is because when the Fed cut last year three times, it wasn't really because of the economic data so much as taking out insurance policies to extend the recovery because of global risks. The market is still pricing in about 37 to 40 basis points or so of easing this year by the Fed. So it's a little bit more than, say, 1.5 cuts priced in. And what's going to get the Fed to move probably is not going to be coming from the high-frequency data, but the international risks. And they'll come to the fore next week as well. We start the week with the Japanese giving us the first official estimate of Q4 GDP. And the issue in the market's mind is not whether it was a strong or weak quarter. Everybody knows it was a horrible quarter. It's how big of a downturn was it. It looks like something on the magnitude of 1% contraction quarter over quarter. But even this might not be really news. We've seen this in some of the high-frequency data. The more important might be data that points to what's happening in Q1. Because after you have one quarter of negative growth, everybody's worried then about a second quarter of negative growth, and some investment houses have forecast a contraction in Q1 for the Japanese economy. We'll watch that because next week we'll get the PMI late in the week, but we'll also get machinery orders for January, which were down very sharply in December, and we also get the CPI. But there again, too, Bank of Japan really off of the table, policies off the table. They're doing what they can right now. We'll watch the trade numbers for January just to see really the international like linkages. Exports were down 6.3% year over year in December, and that was before the coronavirus. I'd say just to round it up with Europe, flash PMI end of the week would be interesting under most conditions. However, recently the survey data seems to be running well ahead of the real sector data. And so to really stop this rot and this negativity in the euro, I think we don't, it's not just sentiment data. It's not going to be enough to do it. We need some real sector data, and we won't get that for a couple more weeks. UK released a lot of data there. They've had a cabinet reshuffle. Focus is going to be on the new chancellor and what this means for the March budget.
Now, what I think is most interesting or most important would be a market reaction, and if any of this data has a chance of changing or even speeding up any of the central bank policies. How do you see that playing out?
And I think that I think the Fed cuts in Q2. I've got the ECB on hold this year. BOJ doing same thing with the ECB, just doing what they're currently doing. Maybe the Australians with some, New Zealand, the Central Bank of New Zealand earlier this week, left policy on hold and maybe suggested they were done easing. We got Australia who's sort of trying to hint at the same thing. We got the employment data next week. A poor employment report might get the Aussies to ease. The market thinks it will towards the middle of the year.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. Some interesting comments, especially when it comes to the bond market, how it's all playing out, and with the currency markets. You and I actually chatted at length before we started recording about the arbitrage that's available to some of the larger investors and brokerage houses when it comes to these type of moves. But I think just understanding where yields are and where the currencies are is important for investors, and just understanding money is still readily available and still pretty actively flowing into the U.S. Mark, thanks for taking time on this Friday. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.